guys, welcome to Vaudeville. I am here with a very special guest. I am here with the chaplain of Northwestern Shiva Catholic Center. I am here with
Father Bradley Zamora, or Father B, as the students call me.
So you guys sit back, enjoy, and listen to Father B. So, Father B, who are you?
Great question. I've been wrestling with that one since I studied philosophy in undergrad. Who am I? I am a beloved son of God. I'm a missionary disciple. I'm a son. I'm a brother. An uncle. A priest. Chaplain. Taco lover. Music lover, musician, singer. Someone trying to do good and transform our world.
So let's break that down bit by bit. You start with you're a beloved son of God. That was the first thing you mentioned. And I think this will tie very well with what you do for a living.
Sure.
So what does that mean to you, being the beloved son of God? How did you come to that place of that being your identity in general? Or has it always been your identity since birth? And like, what does that mean?
Yeah, right. So this is, I think, where the shout out to my parents comes in, because they're the ones, through their own faith, and I think knowledge of their own identity in Christ, chose to have me baptized, right? As a little infant, in August of 19... And it's in those waters of baptism, right? Like so many people, where we get that identity as being a beloved child of God, right? Just as Christ, when he was baptized in the waters of the Jordan by John the Baptist, right? The clouds opened up and they heard that voice, "This is my beloved son," right? That's true of all of us. And I think like that identity is the greatest gift that we've ever been given, because there's so many, I think number one, there's so many people in the world who want to put particular titles or identities on us, but there's also we ourselves who sort of want to say, well, I'm this, or I'm this, or I'm not this, or I'm not that. But really all of that fades away at the end of the day. And what matters is that deep love that a God who created us out of nothing and loved us into existence has chosen to give in us. And that gives a definitive purpose. It gives you worth. It reminds you that you're enough. And I think most especially it reminds you that at the end of the day, you are radically loved. And so I've learned later in life, right? Not like I've known this my whole time, that if I don't start when somebody asks me the question, who are you, with that, everything else doesn't make sense, because that's the foundation for everything else.
And like, I especially like tap into the fact that not a lot of people, we live in a world currently that the idea of like, oh, this like God loving us seems almost a myth. You know, it's like, oh, like, what do you mean? I've not seen this dude right in front of my face. How will I know exactly that? You know, he loves me. And so, like, just, like, to talk to people who, like, either have, like, don't feel that love in a sense, quote, unquote, like, every little challenge in life is almost this thing in which, like, it's just proof that there's no, you know, God in a sense. So how do you speak to that love? Because it's literally manifesting in your life every day. But, like, how do you speak to that to people who don't really grasp it?
Yeah. I think, number one, it's speaking about it. I think one of the detriments of any faith tradition, right, let alone the Catholic faith that I love and I'm a priest in that church, we don't do enough about talking about that identity. And so I think, Naomi, like rightly, like you say, a lot of people don't know God or don't know the love of God. And I think it's because we do a poor job of talking about it, number one, but most especially, words fail, witnessing to that reality. Right, so I think it's like so important that we are images of belovedness in our world today. That's why like the second movement of how I define myself is as a missionary disciple, right? Because it's going out and living this thing. You know, faith isn't this just God and me personal thing. Faith is communal, right? In the Catholic Church, we talk about communion, right? Receiving communion. And we think of it as this act that we do. And rightfully so, we do receive communion. But that communion with Jesus calls us to be aware of the community, the communion that we're also a part of. And I think the more and more we witness into that reality and remind people of it or invite people to come and see the depth of the Father's love, I think that's where that narrative of, you know, God isn't real or God doesn't love me, it becomes false and it becomes a distant thing that people believe because they've encountered a living presence of love through somebody like yourself or any of our listeners who know the love of God and who willingly share that with other people, right? So I think like it has to start with that movement of it's not a book, it's not a doctrine, it's not, you know, some great thing that's kept in some safe somewhere, the love of God. It's something that's lived and experienced. Mm-hmm. And the way that that's lived and experienced is the way in which we, as people who have faith, as people who believe in God, as people who are beloved, actually give witness to that to other people and don't keep that abundance and that goodness to ourselves.
Mm. And I really like how you talk about that because, like, people, there are a lot of people who are like, oh, I was born in this religion and, like, all of a sudden I didn't feel that love being, like, shared abroad, you know, the shared abroad in our heart. And then there's this very, I'll say, the movement of my generation being that, oh, we have to be anti-organized religion because, like, what love do they show me? You know, all of a sudden there's this quote that there's not in, there's no deeper love like Christian hate or something like that.
Yeah.
So, like, how do we manifest this love to the, you know, people in general? Because people don't really grasp it because immediately, like, the first sense of it is that, oh, yeah, you know, religion is judgment. Religion is like some, I remember growing up, there was this giant yellow bus for a church, and the only thing on that bus was the wages of sin is death, and that was all that was preached in that church. So, like, how do we, you know, manifest physically this discipleship of, like, showing this love abroad in, like, to people in general?
Yeah, I think, you know, wouldn't it be great if there was a model or a paradigm or a framework for us to follow to share that love? Oh, wait. There is, right? And it's again, it's not a piece of paper, you know, it's not some checklist that we have to follow. It's a person, right? A living person. Like, God's love was so deep for humanity, for his creation, that he loved into existence, by the way, right? Out of love and in love, God created us. God loved us so much that when we had strayed from the path, his heart was so heavy that it dropped to the earth in love for us in the form of the person of his son, Jesus Christ. Mm. And that person took on our flesh, right? Fully human, fully divine. We won't get into all of the dogmas and teachings, right? That's this for another time, you know, come to one of our Bible studies here at the Catholic Center, you know, but he took on our flesh, which means he walked our walk and he talked our talk and ultimately he died our death. And in that, showed us that it's possible to live our lives from a place of radical, uncompromising, unqualified love. Right? If you look at the stories of Jesus, look at any of his encounters with people, it was, like his Father who created creation, out of love and in love for that person. Always. Now, that doesn't mean that love is always sunshine, lollipops, and rainbows, right? It's not always singing kumbaya around the fire, right? It's not always catching a vibe and just being together. Sometimes Jesus went against the grain. Love can sometimes be tough, right? And there is a challenge that's in love, but it's never in a judgmental, condemning, sort of divisive way. It's always done in a way in which you want to draw the person into deeper relationship, deeper truth, a fuller understanding of goodness, right? That's what Jesus did constantly, right? So the obvious example of that, right, is in John's gospel where Jesus encounters, you know, this woman who's caught in the very act of adultery, right? And everyone likes to use that as this, like, you know, whatever, one side of the argument or the other sort of uses it as their battle cry. But Jesus loves the woman first, sees her for who she is, and then says, right, you know, who's condemned you? Nobody, right? And neither do I. but go and sin no more. There's an invitation to transformation. You know, so if we follow that paradigm of Jesus in leading with love, I think we will do so much good to transform the world that in many ways is just thirsting and craving love. You know, I'm blessed here at Northwestern, right, to work with phenomenal students like yourself and so many others. And when I start with that sort of identity question with all of you, it's almost like the first time you're hearing it, right, that you are a beloved child of God. And I've had student after student sort of just break down right in my office that we're sitting in right now because they've never heard it that way before. They've always viewed faith, you know, whether that's Catholicism or otherwise, as this checklist of things. And the more and more you don't do them, the greater sort of debt you have to pay back to God. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, right? God paid our debt already, right? When he sent his son to die on the cross, our debt was paid. All we have to do is float in love, right? Just sort of like think of it as a lazy river at a water park. That's our job. Every day is just to float in that. We do a really bad job of floating because we think we're lazy or we think we're missing out on something. But if we actually just floated in God's love every day and lived our lives from that space where we gazed at other people in love, where we talked to other people out of love, just imagine just in the little way we can begin to transform the world. In the 2 years that I've been here at Northwestern, the transformation that has happened in the lives of students and on this campus, not because I do anything special, but because people are coming to know their truest identity. When people see that, and when people see other people living from that space of belovedness, it's attractive, right? What is it about that guy? What is it about that girl that they're living their life in a particular way? And they want to know more about it, and they want to come and see. And if we can create a community of belovedness, just right here on this little corner of God's Vineyard, here on this campus at Northwestern University, my gosh, what a beacon of light and love will actually be in our world to truly bring about transformation. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I'm done preaching for today. Thank you.
So let's take a little bit of segue from that.
Yeah.
So we're going to come back with your occupation. But you went on to say that you are a son and you are an uncle, like all those kind of things. So it feels like family is like very important to your identity.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Family is everything. So I'm one of five, right? There's four of us boys and my baby sister. I have three wonderful nieces, a baby nephew, and another one on the way in November. Two phenomenal parents. And just a tribe of aunts and uncles and grandparents and cousins and second cousins and third cousins, four times removed, right? We are just, we're a unit. And I'm just so aware of how blessed I am in that reality. We are all very close to one another. And so that close-knit fabric of a community is, at the end of the day, you know, after my relationship with God and my belovedness in him, that's the next thing, right? That's the crew of people who keep me buoyed, who keep me centered, who challenge me to be better or to not be so sassy all the time. But I love them, right? That's my crew. You know, holidays are sacred, birthdays are sacred, times for us to be together. And just enjoy each other's company. I mean, this past summer, I think, I don't remember how many of my cousins graduated from college, but like everyone descends on wherever it's happening. My sister graduated this past May, and I think, I don't know, there had to be 20 of us that showed up for her graduation and festivities, and it's just good to be together, right? Yeah. So family's everything. If you want to know, if God is a family, right, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, like, gosh, I'm lucky to have that reality in the 60 plus people who I consider my immediate family.
How do you, because like me personally cannot relate to like giant family gatherings. It's just like, because you said in your homily sometimes like, oh, during Thanksgiving you're like many of us come together. Like, yo, that seems like a lot. Like, how is it like living in a very big family, you know, like I'm sure different personalities,
yeah,
and, like, different occupations and all those kind of things, like what is that feeling, because like I said, me personally cannot relate. Seems like immediately I'm like overwhelmed. I'm like, feels like a lot of cooking, a lot of mess, a lot of eating, a lot of arguments. So like, what exactly is that feeling, you know, for you? Because you seem very excited about it, and like I said, it's a huge subject in a lot of your homilies. So.
Yeah, I love it. Right? It literally is my favorite thing. And even when we're not together, right, there's the family group chat and then there's the cousin Snapchat chat, you know, and they're both going, I would say, every day of the week in some way. And it's just, it's fun to just stay, to just be together. Mm-hmm. Like there's no greater way to say it. Is there drama? Yeah. you know, wherever two or three are gathered, God is there. Well, wherever two or three are gathered, there's also drama. So yeah, that's true. But I think that's true in every family, right? But it's how you choose to sort of navigate it and deal with it that ultimately makes a family stronger and an even a greater unit. And you know what? Having such a big family, it gives you room to maybe when a conversation is trending in a direction that you don't want to be a part of, you can easily find another group of people at the same party and pick up a totally new conversation, right? Just remove yourself and go someplace else. But it's just a ton of fun. It's just an absolute ton of fun.
Yeah, that sounds so great. Also, a parent yourself with your own Luna.
I am a proud dog dad. Yes, my soon-to-be two-year-old Pitbull Terrier Luna. Traumatic. No, I've always wanted a dog. And when I came to Northwestern, like, that was my big, like, I really think a puppy would be great for campus ministry, right? And when I first moved here, I was living off campus in a condo, and I couldn't have a dog there. But when I moved into Casa Romero on campus, which is my residence and where we host events for students, literally 4 weeks after I moved into the house, it was Easter Monday. I remember it was like yesterday. I was sitting out in the commons here and I was looking at Pet Finder or whatever. And I saw this pit bull and I was like, I've always wanted a pit bull. I don't know why. I've been around them and they just seem like very loving animals and they're gorgeous dogs. And I saw this one, I was like, I want to meet this dog. And so I called and they're like, we think that based on your lifestyle, you would like this other dog. So I've never told Luna that actually she wasn't my she wasn't my first choice, but I didn't know she existed because she actually wasn't on the website. And I met her like 3 days later at a park, and this little nugget, she was, I think, 8 months at the time, just jumped up right into my arms, and I was like, you are coming home with me. 2 weeks later, she did. I couldn't take her that day. We had a retreat coming up, and I was like, I'm not going to abandon this puppy as soon as I get her. But she's been such a joy. It was rough at the beginning. I was like, girl, are you going to learn to go outside, or are you just going to completely ruin all of the floors in my house? But we've come a long way together. I think we have grown towards one another, and she's just the best thing in the world. And of course, she loves her Auntie Naomi, who takes her to the dog beach and lets her get her swim on here in Lake Michigan. But she's just been great for all the students. I mean, literally, people ask more about the dog now than, where's Luna? Where's Luna? Oh, hi. I'm your chaplain's here. But it's fine. I know where I rank. It's good. But she's been a real blessing. And it's good, like, just to have a companion in the house, you know? So she's my girl, my little sweetheart, little Luna.
And now we're going to segue to you've said it a lot. You said, the chaplain, your resident priest.
Yeah.
Priest. I just wanted to know, because that's a huge, and that's like the first thing people notice about you immediately, like, ooh, that's the priest. They might not even know your name first. They just know that's the priest. Yeah. And then they know the name later. So what brought you to wanting to be a priest? Because like a lot of people I meet, like, that is a no-no for me.
Yeah.
I didn't
want it, right? Like that's how you know it's for you. It's not something that I thought about at all, but my pastor at my home parish, Father Mike, like, I'll forever be grateful to him, because he's the guy who said to me when I was in eighth grade, right, I think you'd make a great priest. And I was like, what? And he told me about this high school seminary here in Chicago, Quigley, which was open at the time. It's since closed. And he's like, we'll pay for you to go there, your tuition. And free tuition was very appealing to my parents. but I went there and I liked it. It was a smaller school. There were maybe 230 of us in the school, all boys, obviously. But it was that family atmosphere, right? So I come from a big family, so I like that, right? You know? And even while I was there, I mean, we talked about it, right? But I wasn't... I was like, okay, like, yeah, like, maybe, but, you know, music has always been a huge part of my life, and... as I've shared in countless avenues here, you know, I wanted to be the sixth member of the Backstreet Boys. And that was a real dream. And so I wanted to go off and study music and pursue that career. Maybe not the Hollywood sense of it, but to teach music, because I knew how transformed my life was through the teachers that I've had of it. And I went down that road, and I applied to the conservatories and got into them and wasn't really happy, right, when those acceptance letters came in like I thought I would be. And I talked to the one person who I thought, like, would really just give me the pep talk and, like, say, no, like, this is so great, right? Like, this is what you should be doing. Music teacher, someone who's a good friend to this day, Jason, and he looked at me and said, you know why you're not happy, right? And I was like, please tell me. And he's like, it's because you're supposed to be a priest and you should move on to college seminary. And I was like, oh my gosh. But I did. I applied and got accepted, and I did have that sense of peace that came. And really explored it, obviously, in a greater way in college. Had a transformative experience on an internship living at a parish, at a church out in the suburbs here in Chicago. Just met some phenomenal people, had some phenomenal ministerial experiences, particularly with young people working there, with the youth group in particular. Shout out to the Voices Teens at St. Thomas of Villanova. But I met a woman there, Marcy, who was the music minister, and she taught me, as Jason did before, that music and this call to the priesthood could live together. Mm. That one informed the other. And I came back from that internship just on fire and moved on, obviously, to graduate school seminary and was ordained a priest for the Archdiocese of Chicago in 2014. It wasn't perfect along the way by any means. God and I duked it out and wrestled a lot. Like, is this really what you want me to do with my life? Like, really? Like, really? Like, no, like, really, God. And he never said no. He never said no. And to this day, he hasn't said no. And so here we are. Right? Mm. 9 years as a priest this year. It's insane. It's insane. Yeah.
I mean, and it seems like something you're very happy with, because, like, anytime you talk about your, you know, priestly journey, there's always a sense of, like, joy, you know, mm-hmm. that comes with it. And, like, I will tell you straight up right now that my mom saw the joy when she came over. She was like, he's a very happy priest. And I was like, yes, he is. And she's like, he's also very, like, those cool type of priests. Mm. Because that's the thing I always ask you in relations. Like, definitely, like, some people are like, oh, yeah, you know, this is a priestly thing. I feel like my own person, in a sense, I would say my home parish priests, I do not know their personalities outside of being priests. They're just mm-hmm. like, okay, we came to do the homily, let's run. Like, I literally have yeah. a priest, like, when it comes to greeting people outside, he's, like, running. Like, I think his personality being that he's very introverted and he just really doesn't like talking to people.
Yeah.
But you, like, are very vibrant about things. Like, how are you able to still, like, I don't know, in the sense of saying, oh, yeah, yeah, be the cool priest, but, like, in a sense of, like, how is it able to still bring that personality to who you are as a priest and, like, not feel like a separate thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because they can't be separate, right? Mm. God didn't call a part of me to be a priest. He called all of me. I tell him all the time, right? Like, bro, you knew what you were getting, right? Because I tried to get out of this thing a lot along the way, and you kept calling. I think there was a time in my priesthood, especially in my early priesthood, where I felt like I had to play that role. And I don't think I was as happy, right, as a priest, because I felt like, well, priests have to act in this particular way and they have to do these particular things and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, I had a really transformative retreat in the summer of 2019, where God was just like, be authentic, right? Like, he just kept saying that to me, be authentic, over and over again. And I just came back from that retreat transformed. Like, I can't be anyone else but Bradley Angelo Zamora. Because I am an irrepeatable instance of God's love and mercy, right? There's not another one like me in the world. And thank God, right? Nobody needs two of this walking around there. But, like, that's for all of us. Like, God created us for a definitive purpose. And we have to live out of the authentic space of that in our lives every day. So I bring my whole self to my ministry. And for some people, that's different, right? Because I don't think I'm the cool priest, per se. I think I'm myself. Mm. But I think that humanity that comes through is a blessing to some people. I think it's challenging for other people to see a priest in a more human way, right? Like, I'm sitting in my office wearing shorts and a t-shirt and my Toms. Like, this is a different experience for some people, right? But it's 85 degrees outside and I want to be comfortable, you know? So it's just different. But I have to bring my whole self to that space. And I think what that does as a minister is it invites other people to bring their whole self, right? Regardless of priesthood or whatever state of life. If we can just show up our whole self, that's where heart really begins to speak to heart. You know, you talked about my preaching a lot, you know, in sort of our dialogue with each other. Like, I bring my whole self to that, right? Because my lived experience of faith and life, I hope, can be a bridge or a window for other people to see, like, oh my gosh, I'm going through that exact same thing. Anyone who thinks any priest, any bishop, any cardinal, any pope has it all together, they are seriously misguided. Mm. We don't. We are sinners struggling for holiness, like everyone else. God just happened to call us to this particular vocation for whatever crazy reason, and I can't wait to ask him someday when I get to the kingdom of heaven. But I think our lives can serve as a way, just as anyone's life can serve as a way, for us to know that we're not alone on the journey. Mm. And good priests in my own life have done that for me, who are mentors, who are inspirations. And I just hope, you know, I hope I did that in my ministry when I was at the seminary, when I was forming, you know, young men to be priests, that they saw that authenticity was important. But that I do that for our students here at Northwestern too, that you got to bring your whole self to your relationship with God and to your faith.
Mm. Quickly, before we move to the next segment, yeah. What are the pros and cons of being a priest?
Naomi, that's a loaded question. What are the pros? I would say that the number one pro is just the trust that exists almost immediately in relationship with people. I'm humbled by the honesty and just vulnerability that people have shared with me over the course of my life as a priest, most especially though on this campus of Northwestern University. And for our students particularly to know that at any time I'll show up for them, right? And be willing to listen no matter what they're going through. I would say at the same time that is also a con. This ministry here on this campus is unique. Mm. And so it's just late hours very often. And so I'm tired a lot, but, you know, so is the mom who has a 2-month-old, you know, or the single dad who's raising a child. Like, so I think it's in a ministry like this, where you are so people-centered, I think a con is the inability sometimes to know that it's okay to take time for yourself. Mm. Right? I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, the author. And she talks a lot about you can't give what you don't have. It's a beautiful phrase, and I wish I lived it better. Because I think sometimes what I need is time for myself, my own cup to be filled, and I don't always do a good job of that. Because sometimes I think the vocation becomes a way in which we say, well, I can't, I'm being selfish in taking time away. So I'd say that would be, maybe that's a con.
Yeah. So also part of it, you spend a lot of time with young people.
Yeah.
So a lot of time with young people, people with a lot of energy, people with a lot of like, this is the moment where we really get through our identity crisis. What major do I pick? I am failing this class. I want to be a doctor. I think not. So like, what is that whole experience like? Like you're constantly like, literally this podcast is about like figuring out people's identity and labels and all those kind of things, but or not, or just understanding who people are. But at the same time, you're surrounded by people who are always questioning that about themselves. What is that experience like being surrounded by those people, including myself?
Well, we won't get into any specifics. I think it goes back to, I think what I just said. I think number one, that people are vulnerable enough and trusting enough to have those conversations with someone like me on this campus. And that's, you know, that's not just, you know, the Catholic students who come here, right? That's a lot of students who I have these conversations with. But I think it goes back to a space of authenticity, right? Like, is what you are doing going to be something that's going to bring you authentic joy in life? And I go back to, you know, in John's gospel, it says, I have come that you might have life and have life in abundance, right? Is the thing, whatever the thing is, that you're studying or the profession that you're thinking of going to, as you think about it, is that the thing that's going to help you experience that life in abundance? If it's not, why the heck are you doing it? Right? I think at an institution like Northwestern, the prestige is another way for the evil one to sort of grab people's hearts. Because I feel, well, I'm going to get this business degree from Northwestern, or I'm going to get this degree from Northwestern. And that is awesome, right? I am in awe of all of the students here, like yourself, who have gotten into this place. It's incredible, right? Y'all are much smarter than I am, at least in that regard. But I think it grabs hold of you, and I think it malforms your identity, because you get lost in the hyper-competitiveness of the place, and you lose yourself a little bit. And so when, you know, a third year comes into my office after being in a particular major for their first 2 years, and they're like, I hate this, I just look at them and say, then stop, right? What do you want to do with your life? You know, and there's parental pressure, and my gosh, I don't even know how much tuition is at this place that people are paying, right? And I get that there are those pressures that exist. But at the end of the day, like, you're a human being who is called to live in God's abundance and to walk the pathways that he opens up for you to be able to experience that. And so, yeah, maybe you came here wanting to be a biochemical engineer, but, you know, now you're feeling called to social services and journeying with people because you had these phenomenal experiences. Why stifle that, right? Like, it's really just leaning into where your heart actually is full, you know? We can use, you know, Bible imagery, like where your heart burns within you, right? Because if your heart's burning within you in that space, more than likely, that's where Christ is and where he's going to use your gifts and talents to really bring you to abundance, but to also transform this world and the particular field that you're going in. And I just encourage, like, those who are listening, who are anyway, like struggling with that purpose-driven life, like, to really ask yourself the question, like, why am I doing this? And if it's not so that you can live in abundance, right? And in abundance, right, don't think I'm talking about dollar bills here, right? I'm not. And I'm not talking about wealth. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, abundance in terms of gratitude and blessings and building the kingdom of heaven here on earth. That's real abundance. Everything else goes away. Ask yourself why. And if you don't feel your heart burn within you while you're doing it, maybe you got to ask God the question, what should I do with my life? and be ready to answer yes when he gives you an answer that's not what you're currently doing. I can only give that advice because I'm not the sixth member of the Backstreet Boys. Because I had to have that same conversation with him as well. Yeah. And I think I am living in that abundance that God speaks of.
Yeah. You really are, I would say. Seeing, like, you just generally be excited about, like, what you do and how much impact you have in people's lives is just actually very beautiful, I would say, from my knowing you for 2 years.
Yeah.
But, like, moving on a little bit, there's something like, you did mention your taco lover.
Yeah.
What makes the perfect taco for you? Like, what are the ingredients that are like, you can't replace that? Are you a flour, tortilla, or
corn? Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right.
And, like, what's your go-to taco spot? Should I, like, maybe in Evanston or in Chicago or maybe outside?
Just okay. Yeah. All right. Now we're having the hard questions, right? So here's the thing. I'm Mexican-American, so I have a very particular opinion about these things. I would say, what makes a good taco, right? It's got to be a corn tortilla. Mm. It's got to be a corn tortilla. It's got to have some sort of meat on it, okay?
So you're not doing no salmon taco?
Naomi, you ask hurtful questions, okay? I'm often offended by people who order fish tacos. No offense to, you know, I'm not trying to, like, you know, get the haters out there, but it's just not, I did not grow up in a fish taco household. Mm-hmm. So it's a very foreign concept to me. Now, will I eat a good shrimp taco these days? I will. But it's got to be a corn tortilla. It's got to have some meat on it. And right, like, OG, simple ingredients, just some cebollas and cilantro, right? Some onions and cilantro on there. With a little bit of salsa, and we're good. We are living a happy life. Now, Evanston. Not the greatest taco place in the world. Okay, now, I will say that my staple in Evanston is to hit up Taco Diablo over on Davis. They some bougie tacos. And they expensive tacos, okay? But they're good. Mm-hmm. They're good. I am a big fan of just their simple carne asada, their steak, their carnitas, their pork. If we're feeling a little, you know, adventurous, we might get some pork belly or the shrimp taco, okay? That's Evanston. I swear I keep them in business, a big fan of a place called El Charro down in Rogers Park. Uber Eats, I feel, just has a direct line between El Charro and my house here in Evanston, because I'm at least ordering from there at least twice a week, probably. Mm-hmm. They have some of the best tacos around here, some of the best tacos that I've had ever. I'm from Pilsen, which is, like, you know, the center of all things tacos and all things Mexican. I love a place called Los Comales on 18th Street in Ashland. They have good tacos. They have good burritos. They have good everything. I don't think I've ever eaten anything bad when I've been at Los Comales. Best Mexican restaurant that I've been to and will consistently say is Las Fuentes. There's a place down in Lincoln Park. There's a place over in Morton Grove. Where was I on my birthday last Wednesday night? I was at Las Fuentes having some good carne and maybe some good margaritas, but that's for another time.
You talk about food in the most funniest way I've experienced. I still will never forget. I think I wrote in your birthday card the fact that you said to call my margarita taste basic.
Okay, we don't go to Chili's for margaritas.
What? It's really good.
I understand. But we just don't go to Chili's for margaritas. No offense to Chili's. When I was in graduate school, I lived there on Tuesday nights. Bottomless chips and salsa for days. But we just don't say, I'm going to go to Chili's for margaritas. I'm going to Chili's for chicken, bacon, ranch, quesadillas, and I'm going to have a margarita. I'm going to Chili's, and I'm going to have fajitas, and I'm going to have a margarita. But we ain't going to Chili's and sitting at a bar and having a margarita. What are we doing?
Because they're good, okay? They're El Presidente.
Okay. Well,
is it really good margarita?
Okay, sure.
That is my opinion on that.
And I respect it, but vehemently disagree with it.
We will agree to disagree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Moving the segue to a little bit more serious. Every guest I have asks them the same final question.
Oh, boy.
Which is, like, people are going through certain identity crises as we speak. And a lot of people are in this state of, like, do I label myself? Do I not label myself? Who am I? Where do I find myself? And you talking and you knowing who you are, and definitely was a journey for you. Like, what advice would you give them?
Don't give up on the journey. I think that's the most important thing. You know, there are chapters of my life, right, at this point, at where I am. But I had people along the way who encouraged me to never give up and keep going. And I'm grateful for them. And I realize not everyone necessarily has those guideposts who are family members or friends or professors or priests. But the constant thread in all of that has been God, who has said at each and every single triumph and failure and everywhere in between, you are my beloved. And then he would give me a swift kick in the butt and say, keep going, keep going. We walk this journey of life, and I would say, as a person of faith, we walk this journey of faith and life together. And so we're never alone. And so to anyone who feels that they are or can't keep going or is struggling, even if you don't know God, you need to know that God knows you. That you're an irrepeatable instance of his love. That you have a definitive purpose in life. And how great it will be, because you keep going on the journey, that you get there and you experience the abundance of life that he has in store for you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Did you enjoy being in this episode?
This was a unique experience.
Oh, okay.
But so is the Naomi experience to begin with.
Oh,
it's the best. It's the best.
Thank you.
It's El Presidente.
You can get this podcast episode wherever you listen to podcasts. So don't forget to subscribe, click the bell button, and yeah, is there any final farewells you want to say to people?
I'm just gonna say, go with God, and go Cats.
Yay, go Cats! Actually, go Cougs.
Okay, all right, okay. And in this moment of disagreement, we say goodbye to our listeners.